For March the 23rd, 2018, we talk about The Shrouded Isle, Amazon's new move into gaming, and we ask you which modern indie games need cool instruction manuals. Welcome to Level 235. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Della Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. So happy to have you here. God, this year's just trucking by, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
David trucked his way out of the podcast for a little bit.
Well, and into employment. So we'll take it.
Week is his birthday. Not that he listens to the show when he's not on it or at all, but like, happy birthday to him if you happen to see him in a place for some reason. Happy birthday to him. But yeah.
Yes.
He is gainfully employed, and therefore he is not on the podcast, so you will be hearing more of me. Yay. Yeah.
Well, say it with more enthusiasm. Yay!
Yay!
That's gay or a... Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Although we did get a couple of... reviews. I sent out a call for reviews, and I like pinned that tweet to the top of my Twitter, and people did the thing. So, and one of them mentioned that I exist. It was great.
Yes, please mention Jala in your reviews.
Thank you.
Yes, please do.
Thank you. It made me very happy. It like made my week, and I had a very bad week because my dad almost died, but he's better now.
That's good.
So, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah. I have something I want to billboard at the top here. So some people who are in and adjacent to our community are doing a charity stream this weekend.
Ooh.
It's from March the 23rd to the 26th. So Friday, if you're listening to this on the regular feed, through to Monday, go to goingcharitable.com. They are streaming in support of the Trans Lifeline. That is a hotline for trans people. It's a good cause. Yeah. And we're excited to see them taking that initiative and doing it. So go and watch them stream and do their thing.
Matter of fact, I retweet that too. I'm going to retweet that right now. All right.
Yeah. So that was my big bit of business. I have no story at the top here.
Ooh, I got one for you.
Okay.
It's actually dinner tonight. So we've taken up secret shopping, which is surprisingly easy to get into. And you like go eat somewhere, and then you take a survey, and then you get free food, or you get your food reimbursed, which is awesome. And so Jen and I both signed up, and every time so far until tonight, Jen has been the one who like took the survey and everything. And tonight was my first time, and guys, the responsibility is just overwhelming.
Okay,
I have to remember things about what I ate.
More it than be, it's good.
It yeah, better be damn good.
It was quite tasty. Okay. It was just the looming responsibility of giving commentary on things that you eat. I don't know how food bloggers do it.
You hold people's jobs, the fates of their employment in your hands.
Yes. I don't know if I should have worn the t-shirt that had secret shopper written on it and then timed everything with a stopwatch out for all to see.
Yeah.
That might have been a bad rookie move, but I'm not sure.
You shouldn't have walked in there wearing an ornate judge's outfit and slammed the gavel after everything you said.
Yeah. But it was good times, and it was free food.
You shouldn't have looked them straight in the eye after they set a plate down and said, interesting, and then written down something in a notebook.
Do you want dessert? You sure you want to ask me that?
Do you get to choose where to go, or do they tell you where to go?
You can sign up online, and some of them are self-assigned, so you just put your name down and be like, I will be at this place, sure. And then I think others, like once they get to know you, they'll kind of like contact you and be like, okay, you're a human who can string together two sentences successfully.
Right.
We will offer you good shops.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah. So that's how you get the Glengarry leads.
Yes.
That's so you're a secret shopper. In a past life, I used to loathe you.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, well, I mean, because, you know, secret shoppers or, you know, retail research, whatever euphemism you want to use for it, you know, those came around back when I worked at GameStop, right? And it was like, oh, man, within the first month of me working there, it was even post-Christmas, I got dinged on a secret shop for not saying hello to somebody who walked in to the store.
Okay.
Which is a big deal. You know, you need to greet people. That's a big, you know, it's a big part of it. And that caused us to get a failing grade. I nearly lost my job because I forgot to say hello to somebody, but my manager said, you know, this is fine. We can bounce back from this, et cetera, et cetera. And so I spun so far in the other direction that I actually started sleep greeting.
Oh no.
I would wake myself up by saying, "Hey there."
Wow.
I guess I would catch something out of the corner of my eye in a dream, and then just be worried that they were going to get me fired.
Wow.
So this is the thing I wondered is, like, because you just feel the entire time you're doing it like you're just painfully obviously the guy.
Uh-huh.
Like I felt like I might as well have been wearing a t-shirt that said secret shopper, because, you know, you gotta follow all these detailed instructions. It's like, well, you need to show up and sit at the bar for so long, and then you need to ask to see this, and then you need to make sure that you get, you know, this and, you know, a dessert. And it's so different from how I normally dine. Maybe it's the same, you know, maybe I dine weirdly normally.
Mm-hmm.
But is it like, did you get good at spotting them eventually?
No, not really.
So Dennis, I feel more, like, secure. This is like the total opposite of the whole 30.
Okay. This is retribution is what this is. Yeah. No, this is right. We had, I don't think anyone who cares about it listens to this. We went to literally, last night we went to Seasons 52, and then tonight we went to Dewey's, and it was fantastic.
Hmm.
So yeah. Good times.
Nice. Well, congrats on being a snitch.
Yeah. You should be saying congrats on being nice and full for free.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm trying to think what the shiv equivalent would be in the restaurant. Maybe a salad fork.
Swizzle stick.
Shoppers get moppers.
Oh, man. How about you, Ben? What's going on?
I think one of the excited events, so we had South by Southwest last week, so that was fun. I got to see two family members in town, including Dennis's wife, who's my cousin. Whoa! That was fun.
Small world.
And then the other exciting thing is we just switched over internet providers. There's not a change in cost, but we now have Google Fiber.
Ooh.
And so I tried streaming yesterday on Twitch, and it was good. Like, there was no lag, it wasn't choppy at all, so I was really happy about that.
Nice.
Yay. Yeah. I streamed too, because, you know, the last time I was on the show, I said I wasn't going to stream for like some time. So, of course, that's naturally what happened after that. But you'll hear more about that later.
Smash Cut 2. Yeah. Nice. How about you, Jell?
Well, I just said the thing.
You just said the thing.
I streamed some. I don't know. I got like an event this weekend. The Hurricane Heat, Spartan Hurricane Heat, the first of my endurance races for this year. But like, all my training's been all kinds of jacked up. So we'll see what happens. Yay. This is only a 6-hour event, though. The next one is going to be the hard one.
Cool. All right. So. I said cool at the only 6 hours. That's
next one is 12 hours, and it's in Austin, which means we're going to be like on some hills and shit. So, yeah, that'll be the hard one.
Well, we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see here. Jala, what's Amazon doing?
Oh, what's it doing now? Okay, so Amazon debuted a new coding tool that's called Amazon Game On, which provides devs with APIs so they can tweak their existing games to contain a multiplayer competitive mode, and also award players with in-game or physical prizes, such as, you know, they can go get Echo smart speakers or basically anything else sold on Amazon, by linking the game to Amazon.com. And devs do have to pay for the goods and the shipping cost to the customers of the prizes. But anyway, they have that capacity to actually give real stuff to people.
Yeah.
This tool, Game On, is currently free until May 1st, after which time devs have to pay Amazon a third of a penny each time a user plays a tournament after the first 35,000 competitions. So,
if
they don't make,
parse
yeah,
that.
They, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. I don't know exactly how, like, how fast do people burn through those usually? I mean, I guess it depends on the popularity of the game, but the idea is basically to become a mainstay service for devs interested in prolonging the life of their game. Uh-huh. So that way, you know, they've got their finger on the pulse of the esport market basically by being, you know, part of the development process for that.
Yeah.
I have to imagine there's some kind of data collection that goes in with the API.
Yeah, for sure. Because Amazon's been actively pushing esports since 2016 when they hosted competitions for Vainglory and Hearthstone. Mm-hmm. And anyway, there's also a blurb at the bottom of the article that talks about how Google is partnered with Ubisoft on coding tools to improve performance of multiplayer games, and that also Microsoft is in development of a Netflix for games type service. Mm-hmm. And I'd reported in about Amazon's formation of a game studio a while back. I think it's probably been a couple of years now. And because of this article, I checked in to see what they're doing. And in 2016, they showed off three games called Breakaway, Crucible, and New World at TwitchCon. But there hasn't been any more about it since, and they aren't releasing any dates for those titles, like any no release dates for those titles. So I think they started in the development, like solid development game studio direction, and then they just kind of like backpedaled, and then they started pushing esports and hosting stuff that way, and then deciding probably that esports was more what they were going to go to, because they've got three studios and three games in development that have been in development since 2014. It is now later, and there's not a release date or anything, although they showed stuff 2 years ago. So I don't
they're like I mean Valve is successful, what does Valve do? Let's just emulate that.
This, I don't know. So
this,
yeah,
this sounds precisely how Amazon would do this. So it's funny because Amazon's entire business model, especially on the web, is quoting a very small unit price for something and then kind of banking on people not understanding how it scales, which I learned when I was hosting our stuff on AWS on S3, and then I got like a $200 data transfer bill after a particularly heavy month. And like, okay, well, we're not going to do that anymore. So I'm I am certain that they understand exactly what that third of a penny will get them.
Yeah.
Also, I am counting the days until we see this mentioned. If it releases, then we see this mentioned as a vehicle for money laundering.
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah. So. I still think the biggest thing they've done is the Twitch integration, which I saw that Vermintide 2 has some native Twitch integration where people watching it's either in their horde mode or in something like that can vote on like what bad things get sent at you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a really cool thing that they did. And then this kind of rings very hollow in comparison to that.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem like, I mean, okay. So I just said they're going to make a bunch of money off of the scale, but I don't understand how it scales for each individual person, how it would scale for a studio to send out those physical rewards, you know?
Yeah.
That one's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be
curious. It's a real loot box.
I'd be curious. I would want to go and take a look and see because their previous gaming related thing, they put out a DevTools Lumberyard, which I think I think that is related to the Vermintide side of things. Like Lumberyard has a Twitch integration on it. I'd be curious to see how people are still using that, because in as far as like casual mentions, I haven't heard that even rate alongside like Unity or Unreal.
Yeah, well, I think anyone who's serious about it is moving to the more traditional tools. I'd be curious to see if there are indie developers that are like, oh, yeah, I cut my teeth on Lumberyard out of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I read a similar article today, too, that was talking about how Google is trying to make like a service similar to Amazon. So it sounds like all of these companies are just trying to copy one another now.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're all trying to edge in and be the first one to really get a foothold in whatever they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that guy's doing it. I got to do it because I got to get there first.
Yeah, but Amazon just has such a first mover advantage on a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, what's the deal with this other OS thing?
Yeah, I guess I'm just in like a free money kind of mood this week. So yeah, anyone who had a PlayStation 3 Fat version or the original version before they came out with the Slim, and has it still lying around, there's a good chance that you might have some money coming your way if you want to send in some information. There was a class action lawsuit. It was a long time ago. The original PlayStation 3 had an other OS capability that allowed you to install. I mean, let's be honest, the only one people cared about was Linux on it as an other OS. And PlayStation then eventually patched it out, citing security concerns, huge uproar from the very small community that was using it, leading to lawsuits about false advertising that actually the whatever... I wanted to say the attackers. That's not the right. The defender, the opposite of the defendants.
The plaintiffs.
Plaintiffs. Yeah, there you go. I like the attackers. Yeah. I've been playing too much Overwatch. Attackers, defenders. but anyway, so you know, they won. And basically anyone who has a PlayStation 3, bought it from a store, not from a friend, is entitled to a bit of money. Nice. And apparently that amount has gone up. Originally, it was not very much. There was like an $8 tier, but a judge was like, no, you can't have an $8 tier. They've all got to be $55. And then because fewer than expected people have cashed in on it or actually sent in their information, mm-hmm. that's now up to $65. So if you have an old PS3 that hasn't bricked yet, as all of mine did, check the serial number. Google this, go get you some $65.
How many PS3s did you go through, Dennis?
It was, I want to say it was, well, I'm on number 4.
Okay.
I believe. Yeah. Because yeah. I had a Fat that bricked. I had a replacement for that. Then I guess technically I upgraded to a Slim with more storage that bricked. And then I got it upgraded with this.
Yeah. Yeah, because my 80 gigabyte Fat is still working. However, I bought it from a friend of the family. So I'm not entitled to this. Also, the $65 would be higher than what I paid for it. So,
yeah, I guess at that point it gets to like, how comfortable are you saying that you like? I don't know if anyone's checking it or not. Yeah.
Well, but I'd also be worried that you would give up some kind of rights. Like you send that away, and all of a sudden I'm like, I get $65, but I'm on the hook for somebody's life insurance.
No,
like,
they've got that. They've got that in the article. It's let's see.
Right, Sony can countersue you specifically.
Well, no, it's right here. It's right to bring an independent suit, right to seek additional reimbursement, and right to your immortal soul. What?
What?
No.
What happened to Cole? Oh, yeah, he got deported to Japan.
But he got $65 on his way out.
They bricked him into a wall at Sony headquarters.
But yeah, this has been around for a while. It's going to end in a month, or the window to claim it is going to end in a month. So if you find yourself with an old PS3 and 15 spare minutes, go get you some money.
PSA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Ben, what is this about NVIDIA?
Yeah, so this is an article. I kind of heard about this sort of thing before, but I didn't really know that it was like cutting edge technology or anything. But NVIDIA announced at Game Developers Conference that they are introducing new real-time ray tracing technology. I guess I had seen non-real-time ray tracing technology before. It's an idea. It's like a lighting system in games where when you're at the camera, you basically program like going off in a bunch of different directions, seeing where the light would bounce if it goes to those objects and figuring out like what color it would be.
Yeah.
And so the idea is you do this in a bunch of different directions, and that's like how you render the environment. Yeah. And so the interesting thing about that is you're basically kind of one-to-one with like reality of like how things are actually lit. Yeah. So you don't have to do kind of like tricks with like graphics where you don't have to do like I don't know, like skins or filters or things like this to try and like imitate that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's rendering by doing a physical simulation of the optics.
Yeah. The problem is it's like very computationally intensive, so we haven't gotten to the point where we could do that, especially in real time. And so apparently a couple different companies have been experimenting this with this already. To use like the new technology that NVIDIA has, you have to get a certain level of graphics cards that they haven't unveiled yet. But I guess even despite this, some companies have been like working with this technology, namely Remedy Entertainment, people who make like Max Payne and Quantum Break and all that, and Alan Wake of recent Cole playing history.
That's what most people know it for.
Remedy in particular released like a 2.5 minute demo video that's really cool, where it just it shows like the camera going into like a planetarium and then them turning out the lights, and then there's like a light show and it kind of like pans around and looks at like the environment. It looks at like a reflective floor. It looks at like the different glasses and mugs and stuff and how everything's illuminated. And so it's really cool looking, and it's, especially if it's rendered in real time, which I guess is the claim maybe. Mm-hmm. So that was just kind of like an interesting piece of technology.
It's all rendered in real time. You just need one of the three computers in the world that can do it right now.
Yeah.
Yep. And also all three of those computers have to be hooked together.
That said, you know, in like 5 or 10 years, yeah, maybe like all that technology will be on your like phone or whatever, you know. So it's like I think it's definitely plausible that this could be graphics that we would see like in standard, you know, in a few years from now.
Yeah, what's hilarious about this is, you know, you've heard about ray tracing a lot, you know, over the past basically since forever, since I've been aware of the way that, you know, graphics are rendered. They're like, this has always been the next big thing. Like, if the people who are developing this don't move fast enough, and this goes for any kind of graphical standard or, you know, these tricks or what have you, I don't know what the actual name for them would be. Like, if they don't develop them fast enough, guess what happens? The resolution goes up. How much easier would this be to accomplish on 1080p as opposed to 4K or 8K or 5K or whatever we're going to next? Like, just every single time, like, oh man, they added a new K. Fuck.
But like, we've reached, I remember reading, this has to be true, it doesn't have to be true, that with 4K we've officially reached the point where the image being shown is more detailed than the human eye can detect.
There's always more.
Yeah, but it's, there's gotta be like an objective line at some point. It's like with your face 4 feet away from a screen, or however far I am, it's probably more like 1.5 feet away from the screen. If it's as detailed as I can detect, then we can stop upping the resolution.
Yeah,
but that would be a logical, rational thing to do.
Oh, for sure. But there's been plenty of stuff saying that like the human ear can't hear detail above 192 kilobytes per second in audio. But then you have Neil Young going out here saying it's the FLAC uncompressed. You got to listen to it, man. Yeah.
And sure,
like,
sure.
Okay. And also like television manufacturers will never, ever say this is the best one you need, because they need to compel people to upgrade every 2 years or 3 years, you know?
Word. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is like, I want to see what the breakthrough on this magnitude is for like the actual animation of objects in motion, of like movement, kinetic rendering, whatever you want to call it, because you can make something look as gorgeous as you want as long as it's static. Mm-hmm. It's an entirely different thing to have something move and articulate believably in real time. Like you can make the character models as beautiful as you want. If they still move like rubber puppets with a stick up their ass, like it's it's not going to make a difference. So what's the change that's going to help those be even more naturally made?
Yeah. I mean, so back in the day, a while ago, they tried selling physics cards, which were basically modified GPUs to kind of give more cycles to the ability to calculate like the way that smoke is handled or the way that the grass is handled. That I'm very quickly trying to look and see like a game that had those. But you know, it's definitely been the case that like we've covered something on WAF that was like you can make it better with a physics card. I think that what you're looking for is like real-time physics modeling or procedural.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, it's what Naughty Dog does really well with The Last of Us and with Uncharted, is just have the characters move through the world in a really believable way.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that, I don't know if it's just animator skill or if there's going to be some kind of technology that unlocks that. That's when I think this visual stuff will really, really start to matter.
Yeah.
Because the combination of the two is what's going to make everything super believable.
Yeah. Good.
As a side note, quantum computers, apparently that's one thing they tout, is that you can like, that's like a physics engine that you're making. It's like the objects that you're making are physical objects. Hmm. And so like you can kind of use it to simulate like things, you know?
Yeah. We have reached or possibly exceeded the ceiling for my ability to speak intelligently about this. I'm positive there are any number of GDC talks about studios, especially modern day AAA studios who have kind of like figured out ways to put in some kind of procedural. Like I guarantee there's a talk about how they get Nathan Drake to like put his hand on the ledge above him as he passes through a hole in a wall.
Oh, sure.
You know, I'm positive that exists.
Be interested to see it. Well, I'll do some Googling and give you something to put in the show notes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, who knows? We'll see what this comes out. Guys, I don't know how to transition. Sometimes that's used for fighting animations. Fighting animations like what Rocksteady did. Like it was a big thing for Batman Arkham Asylum, all those games, the fluid animation or whatever. But guess what? Another series that has fighting animations is the Yakuza series, which probably benefits from some of the guys. I don't know.
Yakuza. No, keep going. You got it.
Yakuza.
That was great.
Yakuza Kiwami 2 gets a release date. This was brought to my attention, I think, by Eric in the stream chat. So thank you. This is the kind of high definition remake of the one remaining PS2 Yakuza game. So it is the remake of Yakuza 2. It's coming out August the 28th, going to be $50. And they're kind of continuing forward with some of the additions they made, like in Yakuza 0 or Yakuza Kiwami. So this is cool. It gets, people who want to play that entire story, the ability to, you know, not have to pull out their PS2s, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How I'm much jazzed. Of an update is this from the original game?
Pretty big. They're using the Yakuza 6 engine, the Dragon engine in this. So it's like if you look at the announcement trailer and then do comparisons of the original game, it's going to be a big deal visually. And also from a play standpoint, I think they streamline a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah. It's exciting, but I don't know how much of it, like, I don't know how much conversation can happen about it, because really all this means is I'm about to say, oh man, I really want to do a deep dive on this series, play it front to back. This will make it easier to do that, et cetera. Fart.
No, that's cool.
Okay.
Prove me wrong. Is there anything to say about this, or should we do a section break?
You fight a dude in a hard hat and suspenders who is pretty good with a knife.
Somebody shatters a glass on the back of someone's head and he doesn't even react to it.
Yakuza is a very good series. Yeah, I've only played the one, but everything that I've seen, it's a very good series if you like the idea of throwing somebody into something. Be it a jukebox or a wall of lockers or a bike rack. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a real throw in somebody into something heaven.
Yay!
Which I think is the Japanese title.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, this one actually comes via way of suggestion of the mysterious John Donovan of Slack and Facebook, who suggested we talk about instruction manuals, which is largely a dying art form in the world of video games, especially for indie games that don't really have physical releases to pack them into. So the question is, if you could choose one modern indie game to get an old school manual complete with lots of concept art and paragraphs of instructions and advice, which one would you choose?
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Stuart, who says, Hollow Knight. I want to see how that minimal additional flavor would look, and seeing the adorable protagonist demonstrating moves would look super cool. Hollow Knight is a very good answer.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I would also like an art book of Hollow Knight. God, Hollow Knight is good.
Yeah.
Jala, what does Caleb say?
Caleb says, Pyre, Transistor, or Bastion. I would love any more content by Supergiant.
Yeah. A Transistor one would be nice. Get like little demonstrations of the ways the modules interact.
They would have to figure out how to do like a musical instruction manual, though.
It's like a little USB drive that you plug in and it starts playing it. Tells you a beautiful story.
Well, it's like Maze the Everglow, where you're supposed to like turn like the booklet, the lyric booklet is like a read along book with the CD. So you put it in and then there's a chime to turn the page and everything.
Yeah. Like a kid's book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Ben, what does John say?
The mysterious John Donovan himself says, dang, got swooped on by Caleb on Transistor. Backup choice, Axiom Verge.
Yeah, Axiom Verge should be good. I mean, given what Axiom Verge is doing, an NES-style manual would make perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Juan say?
Juan says, don't starve. Manual might have helped me. Well, not starve. Yeah, that's all that style of the game is also, I think, very friendly to print.
Yeah.
Like you see that going well.
It'd be a good art style for more things, that kind of woodcut style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jonathan writes, No Man's Sky, that is all. Just tell me what else to do. And then, which one of you said this? This was you, Dennis?
I mea culpa. I will own up to this one. I said, it's just instructions for how to return the game.
Wait a minute. It's just a WMV file. Let me click this. Oh, it's just the developer like shrugging his shoulders and going, you got me.
And take with a grain of salt, I adore No Man's Sky with the time I put into it. So
yeah. Oh, it's just, I mean, it's one of those things that you dunk on by default.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just so easy.
Jalo, what does Adam say?
Adam says, I think a hat in time would be nice. It should have some nice art. Would like to see some humor in an instruction book, too. My favorite ones on the Super Nintendo were the ones for Donkey Kong Country with the word bubbles from Cranky Kong bashing the game and the book.
They were really ahead of their time by bashing their game. Yeah. Neat. Let's see. Ben, what does Dustin say?
Dustin says, let it die. I love the characters in the comics that feed you the lore. As fun as it is to listen to Uncle Death, I would still love an instruction manual complete with the swamp pad, a giant rainbow skull paperweight, a plush golden frog, mushroom soup recipe book. I could go on forever.
You said swamp pad, stamp pad.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
I did not know what any of those things were. So.
No, this one, like, I believe the whole menu system is literally a book. So this would fit really naturally.
Yeah, it's like a notebook kind of thing. And you're playing a game within a game, so it could be the manual for the game within the game.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, Let It Die is actually a really good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Jeff say?
Jeff says, Binding of Isaac, whose layers of interaction are fun to discover, but would probably benefit new players deeply by explaining some hidden content, such as error rooms, deal with the devil, deal with an angel rooms, and such.
Yeah.
And I can attest as someone who's never bothered to go look that stuff up, that it is would be good to have in a nice, easily accessible form.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of that game is the joy of discovery.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely stuff in there that you're just not going to find without a wiki or an instruction manual or something.
Yeah, I mean, the default way to play that is with the wiki open in another mm-hmm. in another window. And I'm sure somebody who plays a lot more of that than I do will say, no, you're ruining it for yourself.
There's a question. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head if you can see the name of the item before you pick it up or if you can only see the name upon picking it up. Because, man, there's an infuriating search problem for you. Like, I want to see the wiki to know if I should take this item, mm-hmm. but I also have no idea what it's called.
What I need is like, okay, it's a pill. It's red. Well, pills are different. That's
why. Yeah.
See, I already walked into it.
You're still going to be screwed.
Yeah. Let's see. Greg writes, even big name and easy to play games like FTL and 80 Days would have been helped by instructions more clearly stating what you can do. Just give me the hint so I know what I'm looking for. Don't need to tell me how to do it. It's hard to find things when you don't know that they exist. Yeah,
that's a I like FTL as an answer. And certainly, like, yeah, you don't need everything given away strategy guide style, just like a, hey, this system is out there.
Yeah. Do it in a, oh man, 80 days would be great. Like, style it after a travel, like, notebook.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how thick the volume would be if you did a choose your own adventure 80 days, like, literally with page references for everything.
that
gotta be possible.
Awesome. That word count has to exist.
Yep.
I mean, it has to be, you know, just huge, but it also has to exist. Like, we wouldn't see it.
The interesting thing to do would be the fight sequences.
Oh yeah,
like that would be. There's at least one boxing match that I'm aware of where you're like, your options, choose your own adventure options are like, you know, guard up or wind up a punch or, you know, a light punch, yeah. And there's kind of a little game within the game there. That'd be an interesting challenge to replicate in print.
Yeah, I mean, it would basically be like a little like fighting fantasy book kind of thing. Like there are choose your own adventure game books that have combat systems in them.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Jello, what does Justin say?
Justin says, Enter the Gungeon has some of the greatest flavor text, so they'd probably write a good manual.
Thumbs up. Yeah, and I would like to see the way they stylize different things. Like, how would the Enter the Gungeon people stylize a bullet point? Ben, what does Franz say?
Franz says, Reigns. There's a lot of implied world building in the game, which would be great with an Arcanium-style manual. If you don't know the Arcanium manual, buy the game on GOG. You'll also get a PDF of the manual that's worth the price of the game by itself.
Yep, Arcanum is another one of those. It's like a Baldur's Gate-style game.
Very cool.
Dennis, what does Sam say?
Sam says, I would love to see a manual for the Cook Serve Delicious games in the style of the old Maxis manuals. They were thick as hell, and besides teaching you how to use all the tools in a complex simulation, they always had a massive selection of essays and photos and illustrations about the game's subject. That's cool. Restaurants are as interesting of a subject as cities, towers, or ants, in my opinion. I didn't know that those games did that.
I'll give you cities or towers, but ants, man. Ants
are very interesting. Yeah.
Like, just give me those ants that, like, you know, create their own. What does Ant-Man have? He's got all the types. What I'm trying to say is just watch Ant-Man, and that's as good as reading any essay about ants. That'll tell you everything you need to know.
My face palm. It's happening.
Let's see. That was you, Dennis, who read that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. He did.
Yes, he did. Okay, then this will be me. Lindsay says, for me, I just want manuals back for all games. Is that so hard to ask for?
No, it's not hard to ask for at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It like, it's definitely hard to think of a specific answer, so I'm doing a scan. No, I don't think anybody has stolen mine, so we're good.
All right.
Jala, what does Warren say?
Warren says, I would say Golf Story. They slowly teach you different techniques and mechanics through different courses that they would apply to as you progress through the game. That's great for someone who is just picking it up for the first for the game itself, but people like myself who play golf IRL and know those techniques exist and want to use them as soon as possible could go look them up if there was a manual.
Yeah,
that's funny. Or that's like, you know, that's like coming to the sequel of a game after playing the first one. Like SSX was this way where, like, you know, you get into the game, you're like, I know all the stuff that I want to do. I want to do the big crazy stuff, but they still want to try to ramp you into it.
Yeah. Just show, like, give me an option. Like, just show me the new stuff. Or you can look at a manual and say, hey, here's what's new.
We could just check your saves and see if you've done this shit before.
Yeah. Yep. Or take your Switch out, plug in a camera to it, have it watch you play 9 holes of golf, and then it'll analyze it and set your difficulty accordingly.
And sell your data to the Trump administration.
No!
Face palm number two.
Ben, what does James say?
James says, Crypto the Necrodancer has a very charming character to it, and its retro design would fit nicely with an old school manual, even if most of its advice for that game is to learn some rhythm.
It would just be like a list of songs to go listen to.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. Our second audio manual of these responses.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, I would have picked a Supergiant or Subset game too. This other one I could think of was Renowned Explorers. It has great aesthetics, complicated mechanics, and a bunch of countries to explore. I have not heard of that one before.
Neither have I.
Huh. Everyone Googles.
Yeah. It's like a, it looks like a hex bay, a hex based turn based strategy game, kind of.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, the visuals are kind of reminiscent of 80 Days.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
At least the top map is that way.
Yep. I'd never heard of it, but I'll have that tab open for probably a couple weeks. And then that'll probably close it.
You know, when that time is going to magically appear where you get to play a new game.
Yeah. let's see. That was you, Dennis, right?
That's correct.
And now it is me. Sorry, we're going quickly, so it's hard for me to understand when it's coming back around to me. Jack writes, without a doubt, Darkest Dungeon would be a great game to get an instruction manual. Class breakdowns, skills with lists of what positions they could be used in, and maybe a partial list of relics would be a really great addition to the game. Oh, Darkest Dungeon would be an amazing one because, like, what I would see is, okay, so each class gets its own little entry, explains some of the skills, but it would have, like, a journal entry of them as they're going crazy down in the dungeon.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Like a little first-person narrative on it.
And you know it's got to be bound in human skin.
I mean, come on. Synthetic human skin, please.
Yeah, as far as you know, yeah.
Okay. Plausible deniability. It's Schrodinger's skin. Jala, what does Patrick say?
Well, first off, feel better, Jack. Anyway, the person in your stream who was in the hospital.
Oh, I did not associate a name with a username on that. So yes, please feel better.
Yes. Patrick says, affordable space adventures from the Wii U. The instruction manual could be brochures about your trip, a ticket for your flight, and then the directions for controlling your ship, but written like an actual ship manual. Some of the in-game loading screens are written like this already, and having a physical copy of this would be pretty cool.
So many games I don't know anything about and so can't offer a witty rejoinder to.
You just got to search the Steam tag of would make for a great physical instruction manual.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's just a bunch of anime titty games. Shit.
Damn it.
Every time. Ben, what does Chris say?
Christopher says, would have been cool to get a manual for something like Wasteland 2 or any recent kickstarted CRPGs in the style of the really nice spiral-bound manuals for Fallout and Fallout 2.
I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I backed Torment Tides of Numenera at some level. I think enough to get a soundtrack or something like that. I haven't looked at the PDFs they sent. I wonder if they actually just have one. That was like that they offered in physical copy for people who backed higher than me, but they sent out to everybody.
I've definitely seen physical manuals as a Kickstarter reward.
Yeah. It's a good one. I wish I did that with Thimbleweed Park, but alas.
Oh, sure.
Alas. And then finally, Dennis, what does Eliyahu say?
He says, I'd love a manual for Into the Breach. It would be great to have more details about the unlockable squads. Plus, giant robot / kaiju concept art. Yes, please.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good one. Especially any game that has that kind of lo-fi pixel art look by choice would be really interesting to see kind of upscaled or fully imagined out in concept art.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to be Googling for the Into the Breach ships as fully developed concepts.
Oh, I'm positive there's fan art out there for that.
Oh, it's got to. Yeah.
To Tumblr. My answer is very quick. This isn't a very intricate game, but if we're talking about something I'd like to read more writing from, West of Loathing.
It'd be
cool if they had some kind of manual that you could get for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jala, how about you?
Well, I would say Yuma Nikki just because I want the dev to explain it, but
explain yourself.
explain what this is. Otherwise, my real answer would be Abyss Odyssey or We Happy Few. Mm-hmm. Both of those are very stylized, and I like the way that they look. So I would love to see a manual done in like the Art Nouveau and then, We Happy Few retro style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good answers. Ben.
This one's fresh in my mind, but I would say Subnautica, because even though I do really appreciate the fact that they don't give you certain information like a map or something like that, they also don't tell you how to play the game. You have to kind of figure that out. So mm-hmm. It would be nice if they gave you just like a little bit of information like, hey, this is how you get water, and hey, this is how you get food. Like, you might want to try that first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stylize it like it's a survival manual that would be included in like your bug out kit from the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they could also, the other thing with that too is then they're controlling what information you get so that you don't go online to look for something and then find out too much information.
Right.
So, yeah.
And then Dennis.
Yeah. So I think mine would be Thomas Was Alone, because then the like graphic design could be the exact same as the character art. Yeah. You killed two birds with one stone there.
Various squares.
Yeah. But also that game has some really stellar writing, and so reading more about each character written on a square shaped like that character, I think would be really good.
Yeah, that'd be cool to see like in a woodblock kind of print, almost like a I was about to say Richard Scarry, but that doesn't make any sense. Eric Carle is what I'm thinking of.
Very cool.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in and letting us know your responses to that. If you would like to participate in the future, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and then watch for them to go up on Monday afternoons, thanks to Jala and Dennis.
The Grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. We have the same crew that was here last time. Ben, I feel like you never go first, so I'm going to have you go first.
All right. Well, I don't have a whole lot, so I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I streamed for the first time this weekend. I streamed Magic Duels, which is an online game. I played that a whole bunch, so that's not a big deal. Also played Rocket League, so that's not a big deal. I did play something new. I played Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy.
Oh, yeah.
The one, I think we've talked about this before. It's like a man in a pot with a hammer, and the controls are you're trying to like climb over things, and it's like kind of purposely clunky controls-ish.
Yeah.
And then it's a very like punishing game where like if you make a bad mistake, then you can end up all the way back at the beginning. There's no like save file or anything like that, so you're stuck with that.
Mm-hmm.
I only played a little bit, and then I got curious and looked up the entire map because that's what I was curious about. And then I immediately stopped playing it and returned it. I was like, I think I'm good.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I don't think the last level
insanely difficult and takes you directly over the first level, so that if you mess up once, it'll drop you all the way back to the start of the game.
Yeah, it's all one level, and right. It does maintain the if you mess up at any point, you might go back to the very beginning sort of thing. So
how long does that supposedly take?
In the article I read about it, I think they said it would take about 4 hours to play through.
Oh my god.
But that's like, the 4 hours is getting proficient enough at the controls that you can actually get through the thing. I think getting through the actual thing is only like 15 minutes or something like that, maybe.
There's a speed run here that is about 3 minutes long.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I gave up. I gave up real quick. So yeah. It's not like a damnation of the game or anything like that. It's just a it's not for me type game. I mean, I still think it's really interesting. It has like similar to like Stanley Parable type commentary where there's a narrator talking over the game. It's not as like meta as that game or anything. It's just talking about like kind of like the design of the game as you progress through it.
Yeah. It has it's like the things that were his, kind of inspirations for this, because he's so Benefati is the guy who developed Quap.
Okay.
Y'all have played Quap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh. So he's a designer who's kind of really known for interesting and awkward control schemes and stuff like that. And it's interesting because, you know, it's just like having him over your shoulder and it kind of said like the overall effect is that like you'll get yourself into a situation or you will, you know, like fall, you know, back to the beginning as I often do when I play this because I'm not very good at it. And he'll like offer up a little quote saying like, oh, you know, like, yeah, that's happened a bunch. We've seen it here, et cetera. Like not giving you any real advice, but just like letting you know that like all of this is accounted for.
Mm-hmm. Letting you know your misery has company.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That he's aware that this was a problem and yet he did nothing to fix it. but yeah, like you looked at the overall map and you were like, no, no, not for me.
Yeah. 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 I got real scared by the latter half of it. So.
Now that's one of those things where I wonder if you, since you looked ahead versus if you looked at it right before you were going into that section, if you would have built up your skills and know-how enough to not be as intimidated by it.
I'm sure I would have.
Yeah.
Yes. I think the part where I got stuck was the part where you have to go up like a thin sort of corridor and there's like lights that you have to kind of shimmy off of.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, Cole?
Yeah.
Not far into the game at all,
right? I've only based on so I stopped the speed run around the point where I got, and it's about like a fifth of the way through. So,
okay,
yeah. The iPad version, I'm sure that it might be more intuitive for some people. Like, I wish I could return that, but yeah, whatever. It's $5 that I'm out. It is definitely more easy to control with mouse and keyboard.
Mm.
I got the regular one. It just like in a Humble monthly bundle, I think. Like it was initially a Humble exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry you got discouraged by that.
It's it's not, I'm not trying to say damnation of it. It's just, I do think it's a very interesting game. So yeah. If people like Dark Souls, they might like this game. Maybe. Right.
Yeah. Anything else?
That's all I got.
Okay. Jala, you mentioned that you were streaming, but I know you have an order that you like to go in, so I will just turn the floor over to you.
Okay. Well, first off, I played a little bit more of Fire Emblem Awakening. I had a baby. The end. Okay. I didn't play a whole hell of a lot. I played like a chapter and then I was done.
Man, how you diagram out that sentence could have radically different meanings. Didn't do much this week.
So I don't have anything else to say about that in particular. However, I did do streaming, and I did warn last time that I would probably get bored of playing Fire Emblem and want to set it down. I wasn't kidding. I did. However, I was incorrect when I said that it would take me a long time to get back to streaming, because I just was like, you know, even if it's only for like an hour and a half or whatever amount I can do, I'm just going to stream this because I need to do some more of that sometime. So I started playing Resident Evil 7 again. And I played an hour on stream on Saturday, but then I got motion sick and I had to stop. So thank you, Cole, for suggesting fixes. This is apparently a known issue. Like there's some kind of butt tracking issue or resolution problem, latency in the mouse. I don't know what the hell, something.
Yeah.
It's
specifically on the PC version. I think a lot of people probably write that off as being like, oh, it's like a first person game. It's kind of meant to be a little bit wobbly, like the camera's out of your control, but that lag is enough to trip off whatever particular kind of motion sickness you experienced is.
Yeah, and that's real weird because I've never had motion sickness in a game before, so that was interesting. I'm like, oh, that's not cool. Like the first time I played it, I played just the intro part. Like this was months ago that I played the beginning of it. I don't remember what was it, October. I don't know. And I played the beginning of that and I started getting a real bad headache. And then when I started playing it on Saturday, I started to get like really warm and then also nauseous at the same time, so I had to stop because of that. But then I fixed it and then I played another hour on Sunday. But I got to a boss battle where I died a few times figuring out what I needed to do, and I didn't want to pull a Cole and get mad, so I stopped while I was ahead because I had other stuff to do anyway, as I usually do. So, yeah, about the streaming thing, I wanted to say thank you to the listeners who watched and chatted with me, in this particular Eric for Z Chocobo, who was basically acting like a Sherpa right when I first jumped into it on Saturday anyway. He was apparently taking a shower the entire time I was streaming on Sunday, but he was around on Saturday. So I know I don't play for a very long time. I was intending to play for at least a couple of hours on Sunday, but I didn't want to get frustrated, so I just dipped out. The main reason why I haven't been streaming for as long as it's been is because I generally only play stuff in short snippets, either because I get antsy and I want to move around, or mm-hmm. because more frequently I just have shit to do.
Right, right.
So if listeners don't mind that I'm only playing on average for like an hour and a half at a time, I can probably still keep streaming and actually doing it with some kind of regularity, but you'll have to at me and let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I stream as I can fit it in my schedule, or I don't stream. So also a lot of my available streaming time is the same time that you are streaming, Cole, and I don't want to be like, you know, trying to compete with you, because, you know, I ain't gonna win that battle.
And which fight?
Yeah, and also I'm usually watching your streams, right. So that takes some fun away from me. So
you know, stream you watching his stream.
Damn it, Cole, you and your prime hex cranking time.
So, I mean, nobody else was doing it. I just gonna to get the. Yeah, I don't know why I'm talking like this.
It's fine. You were doing it. It was fine. It's cool. Well, anyway, so I have the usual Jala randomness to throw out there about this game on top. I really, really would have loved it if Ethan had gone to that abandoned house in the country with pepper spray. I mean, it would have been completely fucking useless in the situation, but it'd be really funny to me. You know,
he
like
would just end up like burning his own eyes.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the effect would be the same because he doesn't have a weapon, but at least he'd have, like, you know, he'd be at least 10% less of a dumb fuck. I mean, like, come on. Your wife is missing for 3 years, and you're going there after seeing a video where she's, like, screaming that it's a bad idea to go there, and you don't bring a knife, a gun, call a cop. Where's the cell phone? The dude was talking to somebody in the car.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I was discussing all of this with my Twitter peeps at one point, and Ko pointed out that the corded phone in the house that I was raging about for so long does actually make sense in the house, as it's basically required when somebody is on probation or is a specific type of felon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Makes sense for Lucas.
Yeah. So anyway. So, Cole, the last time I played was like 6 months ago or whenever. And, you know, I killed Jack with the pocket knife when I wasn't supposed to.
Right.
And, like, stopped after that. And you told me that once I began the game proper, it'd settle into normal Resi vibe. And you were right. That is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So for listeners who don't remember or weren't around last time, I took umbrage at just how gory it was and just how in your face. Like, I'm not squeamish, but it's just too over the top. The opening is too over the top and just burned me way the hell off. Well, once you finish, like, the first hour or whatever it is, then it's done pretty much for now anyway. I mean, like, does it get nasty again later, Cole? Or is that, like, it?
No.
I mean, like, within the normal bounds of Resi, whatever.
Right. Yeah, like, it'll, you know, like, when you get to the guest house, like the old house, you know, you're going to have, like, a different type of thing. It's always different flavors of some of the same ideas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, as long as it's not like an hour straight, like was in the beginning of this thing.
No, no. You
know, then it's okay. So, and the part that I'm working through, there's a bunch of different types of doors with different keys. And so I'm just going through the house looking for keys and stuff. Mm-hmm. And Eric was laughing at me basically because I would go up to the doors and instead of looking at the giant fucking symbol that covers half the door,
the huge animal pinned to the door.
Yeah, I was looking at the keyhole and going, okay, so that's like a triangle keyhole. I need to find a triangle. And he just thought that was hilarious because this is just another instance of me paying attention to very small things in games. Yeah. Like I recognized the thing that was on the door, but when I was actually trying to identify the door, like, and try to link up what type of key I needed, I was looking at the keyhole.
For people who haven't played this and don't know exactly what this is, like, you know, like any Resident Evil game, they have, you know, doors that are locked with themed keys, right? In this game, it's themed after animals. So there's like the snake key or the raven key or the scorpion key. The way they signal that is they have a gigantic version of that animal wrapped in barbed wire nailed to the door at eye level.
Well, also be aware that I sneak everywhere. Like somebody was like, are you just in a house for giants or are you just perpetually sneaking? I'm like, no, I'm sneaking all
but,
the time.
But I mean, constantly. Like Jack is prowling for you and like screaming cool taunts at you as you go. Like sneaking makes sense.
Yeah, so I was about to actually talk about the pursuit shit. So there's a pursuit section with Marguerite, which just irritated the piss out of me rather than scaring me. Like I was just irritated. She irritates the shit out of me. I was just ready for that part to be over with. And then Jack follows Ethan around the house, but he kind of hangs out in a specific section of the house. So once you get past that section, it's not really a big deal. But also, you know, like at first I was like, I don't want to go anywhere because that jackass is over there, you know. But then I realized, you know, he's really, really, really easy to lose. You basically, once you're out of sight, you're out of mind. And even though that makes it really easy, like it makes it easy to lose him, it's really unrealistic. So, you know, I don't even know what the point is if he's that dumb, you know, like for his AI to be that dumb.
To make you feel like you're being pursued, honestly, it's for that initial impression.
Yeah, well, I was trying to be real sneaky at first, and I was like, ooh, this is going to be kind of cool. And then it really wasn't. And I was like, ah, okay, well, whatever. And then I just kind of like ignored it after that. So, but anyway, like the main enemies right now are basically big black goopin or moss men, as Mai called them.
Yeah. They're fungal guys. They're, the molded is what they're called in the game.
Okay. Well, they come out of goo. So, and it is black goo. So.
Yeah. I was just providing the terminology for you. Continue calling them what you would like.
Well, why do they have giant tusk teeth? If they are made out of mold? Never mind. You don't have to answer that.
No. Because it looks cool.
Because Resident Evil. I mean, like, it doesn't need an answer. But anyway, I'm pretty sure that I was at least mildly amusing people who in the Twitch with my statements, because I'm very frequently like, I don't want to go in there. There's going to be like two or three dudes in there, you know? Or that's a trap. That's a boss arena. I don't want to go there. That's not prudent, you know.
I don't want to go there, but I gotta.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing is that I play games very often as if I'm really in the game myself. Other than those times that I'm very busy stabbing people or being reckless, like you know, taking off in a tank in the you know, like Metal Gear 5. You know, trailer thingy, I forget the name of it. Ground Zeroes. Yeah. I took off with a tank in that one and started just murdering everybody. And like in this one, I went up to the grandma and I was trying to stab her.
Yeah.
But, like, I saw her somewhere and I'm like, I don't trust that old lady.
Can't stab grandma.
Yeah.
Stab her with a salad fork.
Right. So anyway, I came across this big bad with a crescent moon arm, and he cut my leg off, and I burst into crazy laughter because I thought it was really funny because you can grab it and put it back on. It's just
like you're a fucking Lego person.
Because his response is just like, "What the fuck?" And I'm like, "Exactly." So yeah, actually one of my problems right now, and maybe you can help clarify this, Cole, I seem to have a problem figuring out when I'm actually dead versus being really close to being dead. Like when my leg was cut off, I thought I died, but I didn't. And I realized that because I could pick my leg up and I'm like, oh, I'm not dead yet. Like it feels to me like a lot of times that the animation is just like, okay, this is the special death animation and I'm dead now. But then I'm still alive somehow and I'm
So that's not incredibly common. Like you getting a leg or an arm cut off, like that happens basically once or twice, you know, beyond the mandatory one when Mia does it at the beginning of the game. Good.
Well, the thing is that when I got to the second boss battle, there were multiple instances where I thought I was dead, but I wasn't. And sometimes that actually caused me to die right after that because I was standing there derping around thinking I was dead.
My advice would be to say, always assume that you're alive until you see game over.
Yeah, I was thinking I should just you know, proceed as normal, you know. Whenever. But I don't know. I guess it's just like my trigger reaction when I see, okay, this is the death animation, is to take it easy and be like, whatever. So,
right. No, I mean, like a huge part of the game is like having terrible things happen to you. That goes away as the thing goes on, but like you're just gonna have to roll with it.
Yeah. Well, I need to talk about my struggles or my thought process anyway. The boss battle, which I will probably finish that off screen, just because I don't know how many times I will have to redo it before I actually kill him. So
right.
I will just like pause it and then start the stream after I killed him. Gotten to that point, then I'll bring it back up.
Yeah,
probably is what I will do. Just because like I don't want to have a stream that's going to be not fun to watch while I struggle with this, and I don't want to get frustrated. And I will be more likely to be frustrated if I'm doing this and I got people watching me waiting for me to be done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know all about that, Cole. So.
Yes.
Yeah. So in this battle, at first I wasn't sure whether I had to get Jack to use his axe on the door or what. And basically, the battle that I'm talking about, you get dropped into a pit, and then you have to fight Home Dog, who jumps down after you. And the doorway is blocked, and it says you need something heavy to break it. So I was like, okay, well, that means I need to get Jack over here so he can go open the door. And that didn't work. Then he dropped his axe at some point and bust out the chainsaw. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I need to use my chainsaw or get him to use his chainsaw to open the door. And that didn't work either. And I was like, okay. And, you know, I think I'm just overthinking it, because I'm thinking about, like, if it were a real situation.
Right.
You know, like after a while, I figured out how to slice him in half and then make the big glowing thing show up, which is the Resident Evil trope. And then you stab that and whatever. I guess I have to do that multiple times.
Yes.
Still. So like he destroyed the, like at the one time that I got him pretty far in there, he had destroyed the pillar in the middle. And I'm like, oh, boy, this is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like basically nothing for me to hide behind anymore.
Right,
but
it's like a caged in area that has a bunch of like hanging meat, and there's also a pillar in the middle, so it's a little bit like a donut. You're kind of doing a ring around the rosy with them.
To clarify, it's not hanging meat; it is corpses. You are in the morgue.
Well,
so,
I mean, you know, corpses are also meat.
But yeah. But, like, it's not just meat; it's like wrapped up bodies. So anyway, like. I was just kind of derping around for a while, and I think part of it is because I used the shotgun on him at one point, and he's like, that gun isn't going to work the way you think. And so I was like, okay, I kind of read that as the game trying to give me a tip that wasn't going to help, but I don't know. Like, is that something I need to be doing, shooting him before I get to the chainsaw or what?
No, like that's how you get him to take a knee, is by shooting him. Maybe don't trust. I think the person trying to kill you is untrustworthy.
Well, yes, but here's the thing. This is also a video game, and this is also like Resident Evil game, which sometimes makes stuff really bleeding obvious. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
you know, like I'm kind of in this weird in between place of taking it as if it were real life and then taking it as if it were a Resident Evil game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. But anyway. So anyway, that's why I died a few times, is because I guess I was in the wrong thought process for the type of game I'm playing. But yeah, like as for getting him to take a knee, I chopped his head in half with a chainsaw. That's how he took a knee. So
yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I'll finish that up at some point and then continue on with it from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's Resident Evil ass game.
Yep, I'm happy. So, I'm happy that you're to the point where you can say it's a Resident Evil last game, as opposed to being something that's just really kind of like off-putting.
Like a mixture of the action style, but also the older school games and how those play. It's like a little bit of both.
Especially so. Once you get out of the guest house.
Oh, goody.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did that. I will do more of that sometime.
Cool.
So, and then the last thing I'll talk about is I played The Shrouded Isle.
Ooh.
So I mentioned this a long, long time ago during one of the summaries of PAX South. And Cole, you played it, right?
Yeah. I never did. I played like a couple rounds, not enough to feel very comfortable talking about it. On my own, but I can comment a little bit like I did with Getting Over with Benefani. I play stuff I don't talk about here.
Yeah.
I'm a complicated person.
Yeah, I randomly decided to stream it one afternoon, and I had a couple of folks that were in there with me. So it's basically a cult management simulator, something like the Yogg or King of Dragon Pass, but with cults. And it's hard, dude. I can't get past like year two into year three, and you're supposed to survive to year five. Good luck. I'm not that good yet.
Yeah.
So, like, to be fair, like the first couple of times I was playing, I was just kind of picking stuff because it sounded good. You know, I was being flippant with it. I wasn't being tactical. Yeah. So,
the idea is that you have like this council of elders, and each of them has their own aptitudes and they're like things that need to be done. You assign them stuff to do, and then there's a report back about how they did. And at the end of every, is it season or is it every year?
Every season.
At the end of every season, you have to sacrifice somebody off of your council. And there are all kinds of like occult kind of consequences for the things that you do or the things they fuck up or for sacrificing the wrong people. There are guilds and like houses involved. So like if you sacrifice, you know, somebody from a particular family, then they will be less likely to serve you in the future. Like you're trying to satisfy a bunch of different masters, like any of these, you know, management games.
So like, you know, you have levels of ignorance, penitence, discipline, and fervor are your four stats for you know, you also, again, appoint those advisors from the houses each season. And you can make inquiries about their character because, like, when you start the game, you kind of know a little bit about them, but you don't know, like, definites in a lot of cases. Or sometimes you don't know anything about these people. So you don't know what effects their, you know, rule is going to have. So, you know, if you put a guy with total question marks, you don't know what his, you know, good or bad traits are, and everybody's got, you know, both of those things. So, yeah, like, it has direct influences on, you know, all of those stats, your ignorance, penitence, etc., with all of their vices and virtues. So, like, you need to inquire into their character, but the more that you do, the less satisfied they are. They don't like you asking questions. So,
yeah. And you can also find out some of those by just like rolling the dice, assigning them to something and seeing what comes back.
Yeah. Yeah. And basically also when you use, you know, an advisor from one house, other houses, especially like the rival house or whatever, will get really mad and things like that. And, they will get to the point where they're rebellious. So, you have to toggle between the advisors, even when sometimes you're, quality meters suffer from it, you know, just to keep people from, you know, revolting basically. And I found myself at one point killing off a really handy guy just because a rival house was being rebellious and it placated them. So like that sometimes is a thing too. But in addition to those items, you also get letters at the beginning every season with different civil issues that you have to resolve, which also have consequences. You know, like different houses will like or dislike you, and you'll have different effects on your community stats and everything. But then you also have people who have spiritual maladies, I think is how they refer to it, where they have to be purified in cages in the tower and you dunk them.
Yeah.
And you only have three cages, and in one game I ended up with more sick people than places to put them, and because of that the contagion spread and I had like half my population was sick. So and then too, on top of that, you have your dark god that you're sacrificing all this stuff to and everything, right? And at, you know, the end of each season, he talks to you and he demands, you know, stuff that you need to do. Like in one game, he asked me to sacrifice the artist, and luckily I found him among my advisors without knowing that he was the artist when I went in and it appointed him. So I managed to find that out during his, you know, rounds as an advisor, and then kill him. But then the next season, he asked for a pervert, but none of my inquiries panned out. So I died as a result of that.
Yep.
So it's, some of it seems to be like chance, because, you know, there's, it's not like I, you know, didn't try to find the pervert. I didn't hit the right, you know, hit the right people or the right, you know, combination. And some of it is, of course, tactical, you know, like balancing all your meters and things. But I don't know, like, it doesn't seem like it's wonky. It just seems like, you know, what something like this would be. It's kind of roguelike in mm-hmm. that way, and yeah. it's meant to be replayed over and over and over and over again. Yes. So,
yeah, like a game of this would be like an hour and a half or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
See, with all the talk of houses, I can't help but imagine it as the dark, gritty remake of Harry Potter.
I mean, that's a little bit what's happening.
It sounds like Darkest Dungeon, but with none of the dungeon.
Right.
But guys, speaking of dungeons, I got to tell you something. So the people who made this game, Kit Fox Games, they also made Moon Hunter, which I played a while back and I liked. Both of these games, the Shrouded Isle and that one are good. Although I think Shrouded Isle has a lot more replay value. But anyway, they're also making a new game right now, and it blew my mind. It's called Boyfriend Dungeon. Here. Romance your swords. Capture the hearts of weapons to level them up in this shack and slash dungeon crawling adventure. It sounds like weird enough to make me curious, and uh-huh. their prior games are actually like solid enough that I have faith that they're gonna do a decent game out of it. But I just don't know, guys. This is like a whole new level of weird. Like let's be a dating sim, but also some other genre, kind of like how Fire Emblem was doing.
Uh-huh.
So, Boyfriend Dungeon, but I posted it in the Slack, and Dennis, you actually seem kind of interested in this game.
So. Yeah, purely from like a design standpoint of like, what would this weapon look like as a person, and what would this person look like as a weapon? Like that's perfect. Really fun to me.
You don't have to qualify it. You can just say that you're in. It's cool.
I shall say so.
No, but like I looked at the trailer of it, and like the art style and stuff like that looks pretty good, and it looks like it will be a fun little dungeon crawler type thing mm-hmm. with dating sim thrown in for whatever reason. So I don't know, but like the way that they write about it is just as flippant and silly as how you would take it as a player. So they're not like trying to be super serious about it. Yeah. So.
I like that they didn't go straight medieval with the art style, that it actually is like a little bit of like a futuristic kind of thing as well.
Yeah. Well, and then like their games are such totally different genres too. Uh-huh. Like every single game they do is something totally different.
Yeah.
So they are an interesting little studio for sure. And like I said, I do like both of the current games that they have out. Yeah. So.
They appear to have a very good art team, right? Mm-hmm. So like this art style and this looks very good. It's a little bit, it's almost like something like edging into Transistor territory. And even Shrouded mm-hmm. Isle, like even though it is kind of like low res pixel art kind of thing, like everything is this monochrome style. Like if you would recognize Shrouded Isle if you had seen it, because mm-hmm. like it the default texture is, or the default theme rather, is like a Game Boy style, like yellow and green and black.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Kit Fox Games.
Yeah. Nice. Very good.
Anything else?
I've been playing other stuff, but I've been talking a while. I'll talk about it later.
Okay. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, not much this week. I finished Knack finally, which was a good time.
You were playing Knack with your kids.
Yeah. They love sitting and watching it. And it... Like, on the whole, the game feels pretty generic in that, like, there's a really cool concept in that your character can, like, absorb the little knickknacks around him. Haha, get the name. To grow in size. But it never felt like they did that much with it. It's a pretty straightforward light platformer, light brawler, not that much else to it. Until you get to the final boss fight.
Okay.
And man, oh man, does this game stick the landing. Like, it's like, I just want to scream as I'm playing and loving the hell out of this final level. Like, why couldn't you do this the entire time? Because they, they do the whole size changing thing, but it's like an order of magnitude bigger than the rest of the game does it. Which, there's a bit of a shock and awe factor where, getting building sized in the main game is impressive. And then you're like, skyscraper sized in the final boss fight. But then just the entire design of that fight has shades of Shadow of the Colossus. Oh, wow. There's a good amount of like kind of timing and just enough puzzle, and it feels like a test for everything else you've learned in the game and everything that makes a good boss fight. It was just a really, really satisfying conclusion to the game. So there's a ton of potential there, and I believe Knack 2 is either out or coming out, and hopefully they capitalize on that potential.
It came out last year, I think.
There you go, yeah. So I'll have to see if that takes up any of the stuff that was learned right at the end of the first Knack. But I kind of went out on a real high note, even though the overall experience, like I said, was fairly generic. A couple of interesting Knack nits to pick.
How long have you been waiting for that one?
That came to me literally as I said it. So,
all right.
Because it's off the cuff. You're welcome. The story like wants to be a little more involved than I think it has the capability to be. Like there's some really like I would say subtle stuff going on in terms of like the politics of the world that they're in, but it's also kind of this oriented towards kids games, or so you know it doesn't really deliver on any of that, or what it does deliver on kind of goes right over the heads of any kids that are watching it. So that's interesting. A real random one is, for whatever reason, they didn't know how to make teeth white in the game. I don't know what it is, but everyone's teeth are gray. Like a fairly dark shade of gray. And I have no idea why this got out the door that way. Like the only thing I can imagine is like the animation engine with like the shadows that it cast or whatever. Like if, unless they turned it all the way up to white, it would like be bright and stand out completely wrong. Mm-hmm. And so they had to dial it back until it didn't do that. And that was just oddly gray. So they're just like, we'll live with it and hope no one's looking at the teeth. But man, you watch the cutscenes and it's like, does anyone ever brush?
I'm guessing industry patent on white teeth.
Yeah. Crest has a stranglehold on the market.
Wow. Yeah.
That's kind of an odd decision. And then the save hygiene in this game is nowhere near where it should be for a modern game. It auto saves like once at the beginning of every long section of level. And I guess it assumes that you're just going to keep the game running in the background, because if you ever fully quit out of the game and come back, it resets you pretty far. Yeah. So it was frustrating to have to like replay through sections that I'd beat, especially because, like I said, the gameplay is not that special. So repeating stuff is kind of salt in the wound. It's this weird place where I feel like I'm accepting it because it's something I can play with my kids, even though it's lower quality. And I feel like I haven't had to make that choice for a while in like the movie realm.
Uh-huh.
So it's frustrating to have to make it now in the game realm. And I'm looking forward to the time at which that stops being an issue.
When they start liking good stuff.
Hopefully. Yeah. or just there's I'm sure there's plenty of good kid-friendly stuff out there.
Yeah.
Case in point, I'll be going. I haven't started yet, but I'm going to start playing Rhyme next.
Okay. Yeah.
So yay, we'll see Rhyme. How that goes.
That's like the.
Yeah, I have a little.
Go ahead.
Oh, I have a little. I might still have it. A little plushie from the little fox that's in that game. So I might have to mail that to you since you have Chitlins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we'll see how that goes.
That's the one that's it's like it looks like Journey, but it's designed to play a little bit like Eco.
That is exactly the analogy I was going to make. That's okay. Perfect. Yeah. So you'll be hearing about that in weeks to come. The other thing that I played, it was really interesting. So I was reading about Fortnite because Fortnite is everywhere, and I was like, maybe I should install Fortnite. Well, I'll go try PUBG again first. Just try the new map. Jumped into a game and as always spent 15 minutes without seeing a soul, died out of nowhere, and was like, oh yeah, that's why I stopped playing.
All right.
Yeah. It's, you know, after the thrill of collecting loot dies out, there's really, I don't know, just not much there for me. So then at that point, you know, Fortnite I downloaded, I'm like, ah, is this going to be any different? And I noticed in the co-op and multiplayer Slack channel, someone had posted a browser-based Battle Royale game. Man, Battle Royale is like, saying that is like having a mouthful of marbles there. It's like the rural juror there. But anyway, so someone had posted a game, browser-based, same concept of all, as all these Battle Royale games, called Zombs Royale. And that's Z-O-M-B-S, like a shortened form of zombies. And it is everything I wanted out of this genre of game. It's the exact same arc of dive in, find loot, fight people, in, you know, in a closing circle, compressed down to about 5 minutes instead of, you know, 20 to a half hour mm-hmm. per game. It is incredibly simple. It's just a top down view. You're aiming, you know, around the screen with your mouse, moving with WASD, but it's all from a top down perspective. The weapons are really interesting because the type of weapon affects how zoomed in the game is. Hmm. So, you know, a submachine gun, you're putting out a lot of damage, but you're zoomed in so far that it's a little hard to you know, be tactical unless you're up in someone's face. Whereas when you pick up a sniper rifle or a hunting rifle, the camera zooms way out. And so it's kind of this really, really elegant way to mimic different levels of scoping when you're in this top down third person mode. That just, it was, I'd never seen anything like that. And it was super intriguing to me. And it made the battles play out in a really interesting way. Because you are, you know, when you're hiding or trying to find people, you've got your hunting rifle out and you know, pop off some shots at them. And then once you're closed in, you can switch over to something that is, you know, higher damage output, but lower quote unquote range.
Right.
To finish people off.
Yeah. And you have a mini map that's zoomed out. It doesn't show people, but it shows you the area around you. So like if you're navigating, you can keep an eye on that.
Zoomed out is a very relative term, because when you're flying over the map in the plane at the very start, which is arguably the most important time to be looking at the mini map to decide where you want to go. The zoom of you in the plane is about the same level of the zoom on the minimap, so it's not that useful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, during the match, you're kind of using that to get a feel for where the circle is and what buildings you want to go to. Combat in buildings is super interesting. If you're in the building, you can see everywhere. But if you're outside the building, you can't see in unless you're right next to a window or a door. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of get next to it while, you know, still behind a wall and peek in. And so that affords you some degree of protection as you're approaching the building, but there's no guarantee that there's not someone in there, and they can definitely see you.
Yeah.
If you're in the range of the building. So that, you know, the strategy for going into buildings is like, okay, do I pop off some shots into this small shack to maybe kill someone who's in there, but reveal my position? Or if I see someone's in there, can I whip out my rocket launcher, which is pretty useless anywhere else in the game, because mm-hmm. It's a very slow projectile and it doesn't explode unless it hits the person directly. If I fire that into a building, suddenly it's super effective. So the weapons kind of have this interesting interplay as well. So yeah, a great translation of that genre to a top-down, super lo-fi execution that all fits within 5 minutes. It's exactly what I wanted, and I haven't opened Fortnite because I don't need to. I found what I was looking for.
Yeah.
In a really interesting way.
So that's the a browser game, free to play.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
You can do some character customization. I doubt there is paid anything for this game, because you enter your name at the beginning and hit enter to start playing. So I think this is clearly a passion project for someone and not anything that's intended to suck you in or make money or anything like that. Mm-hmm. One other interesting thing they do is each weapon type has a rarity as well. And so it's, you know, your typical like white, green, blue, purple, yellow, red. I forget what the top end is. But so, you know, you can find two hunting rifles, but because you happen onto like a red one or a gold one versus a green or a blue one, you're going to be putting out more damage.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also interesting because it has implications for like looting bodies when you kill someone, or, you know, deciding to get into these fights. If you see if someone has a really high powered weapon, you might just want to run away. So yeah, who knew that the epitome of this game genre for me was going to be something so simple.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I had heard about a handful of these, and it's great to see how portable like that concept is, right?
Yeah, it's intriguing to kind of see the birth of a genre, right? Mm-hmm. Like we haven't had, and you know, it's a format within a genre or whatever you want to call it, but this kind of battle royale genre feels truly new and different. And you know, there's out or in the works all these different variations of it. And it's kind of really cool to see that evolve.
Yeah. It's also very, very strange to see Fortnite everywhere now.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. I don't know what they did. I don't know what agency they paid to get it out there. But like, I remember even like 6 months ago when you first brought this, it was like, oh, that's a game? Huh. Yeah. That's a big studio. This thing is going to die on the vine. And then to see that like, now it is this massive streaming success, and like that shitheel Jake Paul or whatever is Logan Paul rather is streaming it now, and like huh, something happens where something that wasn't a thing is now a thing.
Yeah, the vultures are starting to cash in, and you know it's big.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, go figure. But those are the two things I've been playing. More Overwatch. Obviously, I placed in bronze tier, which is nothing special, and I'm steadily working my way up to silver, which is fun to have a goal.
Yeah.
And the usual XCOM and Into the Breach and strategy game gamut, as always, is going on in the background. But
yeah,
go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say it was remarkable last week when I was making those show notes between Into the Breach. I think somebody talked about XCOM. Jala talked. Jala talked about Fire Emblem. Like everybody brought some kind of strategy.
It's because it's the best type of game.
And they're very good games, Bron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to stop you. But so you played Zoms Royale, Fortnite, and Knack.
Zoms Royale. No Fortnite.
No Fortnite. Okay,
didn't,
sorry.
Didn't need it.
Thank you for correcting my notes.
Yeah. But yeah, that's me.
Cool. For me, it's nothing much. So I have been very busy doing spring cleaning, honestly. That isn't really pertinent to the show. It's just
cleaning
been a thing
the
that
fans.
Oh gosh, clean your fans, everybody. Public service announcement. I do it once a year. You know, around spring when I pull them out, but I run them all the time. I need to clean them more frequently because it is a horror show. And I would
need to clean the tops of your curtains or your blinds or whatever, and then also take a broom to your ceiling.
Yeah. Oh, I launder my curtains twice a year.
Okay.
So that's not a big deal.
Well, what about the like area right where the rod connects and everything? Do you clean that off too?
Oh, but when I'm up there, yeah, I got a rag.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I got a rag. Good. I use some compressed air. Take some compressed air to the Venetian blinds, you know?
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
But do you clean under your furniture?
I rearrange my furniture a lot, so I actually do.
Even the bed?
The bed, not so much. But my bed is
Cole.
Like a gigantic wooden
platform.
Damn
it, Cole.
Come on.
I'm trying to find the one thing.
Like, no, I have to.
Do you clean under the refrigerator, Cole?
Actually, no. But as a renter, I'm afraid to touch the fridge. Because if that thing breaks and I don't have anything to do with it, I get a new fridge. If that thing breaks and I have something to do with it, I think I'm on the hook for a fridge. Yeah. No, but something I have been playing, so I mentioned it last week, Pokemon Picross. So been on a bit of a Picross game kick lately. It's, you know, it's a little bit like giving your brain a scalp massage almost. You know, pick your poison for whatever kind of puzzle this will remind you of, either a crossword, you know, and doing crosswords for fun or doing a Sudoku or whatever. Like, I just, you know, I beat all 300 puzzles in the Picross S, and I was like, let's keep this going. A couple years ago, Nintendo and the Pokemon Company put out a Picross game that is all themed after Pokemon. So you're going in and filling in the squares on the grids based on the numbers on the sides. And at the end, you have like a little pixel art drawing of a Pokemon. That core is still incredibly good. The thing that is annoying and the thing that kept me away from it for a while is the fact that it is couched in some pretty bad free-to-play nonsense. So what I will tell people who are listening, who are thinking, yeah, I like Picross puzzles, I'm into Pokemon, you know, I am at the center of this Venn diagram. Don't let that dissuade you. Just treat it like you are buying a $30 Picross game, which is a perfectly reasonable, you know, amount of money to pay for a, you know, a portable Nintendo game, right? You know, for your 3DS. Because if you get it for free, you know, the game has an energy meter. You have to, you know, either watch that and refill it with the in-game currency, or just like set it down and wait. And God help you, if you can stop yourself from doing more than 3 Picross puzzles in a row, you have more willpower than I do. and then also, like, to open up new areas, you know, on this little map, it's like a Super Mario World map or whatever. You know, you're moving to different nodes and stuff. You do have to spend this currency. However, like, to open up a new map, it's like 150 Picrites is what they're called. Like 150 Picrites, you know, somewhere around there. For clearing a puzzle and for, like, satisfying all of the missions in it, and I'll talk about those in a second, you get like 5 Picrites.
Whoa.
So like the curve is kind of specifically designed to like run you into that as quickly as possible, into a point where, you know, it is necessary that you drop money into it. So like, take that off of your plate, just drop the $30 on it, you know, try it out, see if it's, you know, see if it's for you. And, you know, if yes, like, don't even bother with it, because I tried treating it as a free-to-play game and it drove me up the fucking wall.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. One of the things, so one of the ways that it benefits from being a Pokemon-themed game, the idea is that you're going to these different areas, these different places on the maps, and when you solve the puzzle and, you know, you have the little picture of a Pokemon at the end of it, you've actually caught that Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And different Pokemon of different types and different strength values actually have different abilities. And you have the ability to take certain ones of them into battle. So like, you have one like a Scyther or something. It's like a bug type and he has a slash. Well, his ability is, and these are all on timers as well, like recharge timers, is like a slash reveal. And so like randomly, somewhere on the puzzle, it will reveal like every correct square on like a horizontal for like a row or for a couple of rows. And as the Pokemon get, you know, get stronger as you evolve them, and as you get better ones with, you know, with those same abilities, they'll either reveal more, or you can use them more times if you want to, or they will be effective on different sizes of puzzles. So like, you get a super busted Pokemon like a Weedle, maybe it only works on a 5x5 puzzle. Whereas, like, later on, you get a legendary and it'll work on a on like a 20x15. Sure. You know, I try not to rely on those because I like solving a Picross. However, they do have ones, you know, they run the gamut. So, like, there are ones that have a certain like number of autocorrects. So, like, if you accidentally mark a square the wrong way, then it'll, you know, go in and fix it for you so you get a good idea. Or they have, like, scans, you know, like, little, like, some abilities let you, you know, just run a check over everything and it will correct a certain number of squares. And, like, getting a, you know, a good stretch of an edge row actually is a really, you know, it gets you pretty far in a Picross puzzle, because like every correct square becomes the basis for drawing a conclusion about another little area, you know, or a particular row or column, right? So those do end up making a big difference. Go ahead, Ben.
I was gonna say, do they have like a Snorlax function where the app just sleeps for like 8 hours?
I have Snorlax. He just does a rising reveal, so he'll reveal a couple of columns. Yeah, you know, like he's getting up or doing like a thing. Yeah.
Is that the term they use in the game?
Yes, a rising reveal.
All right.
What? Like, because it's like boners? What? Yeah. No, but it's like, it's a good, fun Picross game. I have no idea how far I am in it. But it is, you know, like any other Picross game in that you'll sit down and, you know, like, I can solve a 20x21 in about 7 minutes. So you just, you know, like while you're going to bed or like in between things, if you need a little break, again, to give your brain that scalp massage, Pokemon Picross suffices as well as any. It's on the 3DS.
All right. I got the big question. Are you going to ditch this and play Detective Pikachu next week or what?
Is Detective Pikachu coming out?
I think it's coming out this week. I think.
Huh. What is Detective Pikachu?
It doesn't seem like it's an actual game, but it's just Pikachu solving crimes as a detective and is voiced by a deep voiced man. It looks like a fake game, but I was reading an article of like games that are coming out this week and that was on there.
Huh.
As if it were a real game.
Yeah. What is it? I think, do they have Ryan Reynolds voicing Pikachu in this?
Oh my gosh. I don't know about that. But I do think we talked about this like maybe months ago. I thought Jala might have brought it up, but maybe I don't know.
No, Ryan Reynolds is providing a voice in the film adaptation of this. The one reason why I know about Detective Pikachu is because people got upset that they didn't cast Danny DeVito as Pikachu. Yeah. I'm curious. I wonder if Detective Pikachu is like a Pokemon theme. If it's a Pokemon themed Phoenix Wright, then yeah, I'm down for it. But
it looks like a Heavy Rain in the Pokemon universe.
That's great.
That's ridiculous. I don't know. Probably not. This is satisfying a very specific need for me. So, But yeah, that's all I've got. Man, I love Picross. Picross is a good style of puzzle and also good video games.
I was wondering if this is going to be one of those times where you say Picross so many times in a row that it loses all meaning for me, but you cut it back. You curbed it. You curbed your Picrossing.
I'll find a new obsession next. It's just this is somehow working for me. And it's come and wave. It's come and gone in waves in the past too.
So. Well, I have nothing to say about your obsession with it. It's just like when you're talking about it, you very frequently say Picross to the point that I don't know what the word means anymore. If I ever did know what it meant in the first place.
Oh, so yeah, that's what I'm up to. I hope I'll have some. Hope I'll have some new stuff next week.
Yay!
Yeah. Any opposition to calling it quits? But wait a minute. No, I forgot it. See, Jelly, you got me so self-conscious about saying particular words that I forgot. Hey, do you guys want to button it up?
Buttons.
Okay. The credit. I don't know what happened there. I think I went into a fugue state.
It's all a Picross.
Writing that on my podcast secret shop survey.
God damn it. Oh. Thank you for listening to Level 235. We really appreciate it. If you want to help us out, you can follow Jala's request and leave us a rating or review. Mention Jala.
Yay!
I was about to say that, like, mention Jala and you'll get... But no, really what you'll get is our appreciation for taking the time. It's not...
Our eternal gratitude.
Yeah. Or, you know, momentary gratitude.
That or he's signing me up for something without consulting me. And
No.
We're going to have a talk. I know where you live.
Yeah. No, I will not promise eternity. I will promise a moment of gratitude. Frankly, it's unrealistic of people to expect eternity. I don't know why you would say that, Dennis. No. Also, like I said at the beginning, if you want to watch a stream and... donate to a trans friendly cause, go to goingcharitable.com. That is some friends and associates of the network, people tangential to us, spinning off and doing their own benefit for the Trans Lifeline. That is March 23rd, 24th, 25th, and 26th.
Yay! Yeah.
Cool. Otherwise we will be back next week. I mean, unless something happens, watch social media. I feel like I'm hedging too much now. So why don't we call it quits? Thanks everybody. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me, you can find my streams, twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
Yep. And I'm Dennis Furia. You can catch me on Twitch at greenlaser73.
I'm Jellichon in places. Find me there.
I'm Ben Merkel at MerkelBee on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles.
So we've completed the transformation of Twitter to Twitch, it sounds like.
Yeah, it sounds like it pretty much. Although I'm still on Twitter.
People you're still can actually everywhere. Talk to
me. I'm still everywhere. I'm in places. Yeah. You can find me there, and I'm Jellichon in all the places that I am. So
see, the thing is, you've done it the same way so much that if you change it up, then all of a sudden people are gonna get really
well, besides which, I don't want to be all exclusive. It's not at all about the Twitch. You can find me in places. I'm sociable. It's fine.
Yeah. Does anybody have any titles?
I have three.
Okay.
Schrodinger's Skin.
I have that as well. Mm-hmm.
I have that as well.
Anime Titty Games.
That might make people angry.
Yeah, I know. And then Giving Your Brain a Scalp Massage.
Okay, Ben.
The only other one I have is Dunk On by Default.
Dennis?
I too had Schrodinger's Skin, and then I also had Knacknets.
Knacknets. Schrodinger's Skin is the only one that I had. Any
just do that one.
Yeah, let's do that.
I think that one's unanimous.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'm going to go to bed, but in reality I'm gonna go I'm gonna go do some Picross and listen to some crazy news stuff on YouTube.
I'm gonna eat a dinner, take a shower, and then probably play some Inner World.
Ooh.
2.
Neat.
Yeah.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good week. Thank you.
See you guys. You're out. And see some of you in person next week.